You remember we had we talked about a film screen. I think it was one of the Screen on the Green or something that had up in lights outside the cinema. Gladiator 2, Paddington 3.
Yes.
And someone had added, just written a line, good away win for the little fella. So off the back of that, Mike Garvey says, back in 2001, Captain Corelli's Mandolin was on release at the same time as the latest effort from Steven Seagal. I saw a cinema marquee where Nick Cage's film title had been abbreviated, offering the icky sounding Captain Corelli's Exit Wounds. Which is not something that you would want to see, but this is the one that wins.
Even less than you'd want to see Steven Seagal's Mandolin.
Exactly. Now that was uncalled for. Alan Fraser, thank you for this. Please find enclosed a photograph of the Toledo Cinema in Muir End in Glasgow from 1988.
Okay.
The films showing that week were Big, Frantic, and Shag. Which, as they were billed in that order, screens 1, 2, and 3 screamed, Big Frantic Shag. This is not the activity the Drifters were singing about happening in the back row of a cinema on a Saturday night and would surely contravene the code of conduct on at least 4 counts. Up with good things and down with bad things. They knew what they were doing.
They knew what they were doing.
Put them in any other order other than that 1, 2, and 3.
In the same way that the multiplex that put The Pope Must Die in bed with Madonna knew what they were doing.
Exactly. And Becky says, the recent discussion of Douglas Adams quotes has prompted me to write in to tell you about a game we play in our family whenever we hear a funny story or comment. This game basically involves declaring whether the thing you've just heard sounds more like Douglas Adams, Terry Pratchett, or Alan Bennett.
Yes.
Being Brits a long way from home, currently residing in Burlingame, California, this always helps to remind us of the particular and peculiar sense of humour that our home nation gifts to the world. So if something sounds both darkly comical but reveals a real truth, then that's Douglas Adams.
Okay.
If something is both comical and absurd, it goes to Terry Pratchett. And if something sounds both comical and whimsical, it goes to Alan Bennett. To give an example, we claim for Alan Bennett the comment by my elderly neighbour that she, quotes, wasn't cooking Brussels sprouts for Thanksgiving this year because it was her husband's favourite vegetable. Douglas Adams got the feedback given to my old boss, who told me that she spoke as if the you moron was silent at the end of every sentence. As for Terry Pratchett, he gets pretty much anything written by the National Park Services here in America, whose Instagram post on November the 27th this year ominously read simply, your chances of being hunted by a turkey are low, but never zero, with no further explanation. Anyway, all the best and season's greetings from Northern California. It's a good, which is a good game.
Excellent.
It's the one time of the year I get to build my part up rather than sit at the end of a Zoom call recording the show. So I'm not apologising for that. You may be wondering how I ended up like this. It's a bit of a sad story. I was in a car accident, unfortunately. I met a handsome doctor in the hospital who told me I could spend 7 days as a Christmas cracker and 7 days as myself. But the Christmas cracker started to really enjoy itself. Youthful, firm, explosive strip. Lovely cardboard tube. Didn't want to go back to being me. When it was me, I resented the Christmas cracker. I started to hate it. So there was this conflict, you see. And the cracker started to break the rules. Then I started to break the rules. And now I ended up like this half-human, half-cracker mutant you see before you. Who knows how it's going to end, but people in the front 10 rows, I hope you've got your own, Max. If you haven't seen The Substance, you really should see it. Before Mark and Simon come on, do me a favour. Whenever you see a Christmas cracker on stage, would you please shout, "Oh, what a cracker!" Fantastic. They're going to hate that.
Obviously, we're rushing through this. Arrange these three Christopher Nolan films from lowest to highest grossing worldwide box office, okay?
Yep.
A, Interstellar. B, The Dark Knight. C, Inception. So starting from the lowest, going to the highest.
I think it's...
Sorry, I beg your pardon. Dark Knight Rises. So A, Interstellar, B, Dark Knight Rises. Actually, that's shocking. A, Interstellar, B, Dark Knight Rises, C, Inception, from lowest to highest.
I think it's Inception the lowest, then Interstellar, then Dark Knight Rises?
Nope.
Ah.
Interstellar is the lowest, then Inception, and then Dark Knight Rises. But including Oppenheimer, how many Christopher Nolan-directed movies has Cillian Murphy appeared in?
Six.
Yes. Well done.
Pretty good.
What was the name of Christopher Nolan's feature debut?
Following.
Well done. From which Scandinavian country does the original film...
Norway.
Very good.
Very good. I've started, so I'll finish. What name is given to the world of infinite subconscious, which Leonardo DiCaprio's Cobb fears being trapped in Inception?
What Limbo.
Yes. They've given up clapping because it's just like, you know... What are the initials of the person Guy Pearce is searching for in Memento?
John G. Or JG.
Yeah.
Initials.
Yeah, the clue was in the word initial.
Fair enough.
According to Cobb in Inception, how much does 5 minutes in real time give you in dream time?
It's an hour.
It is an hour. Well done.
Yeah.
How many Oscars was Oppenheimer nominated for?
13.
Well done. You're very good. Which villain did executives from Warner Brothers originally want for The Dark Knight Rises?
Penguin?
Riddler. I mean, a bad idea, but you know. Well done, congratulations.
So we're going to race through this, Mark.
Right, work with me, okay? Here we go.
We're going to race through
yours,
this, Mark.
I know, I'm going to race. Right. Your specialist subject is?
Elf.
Well done. That's one. That's correct. That's... Okay, name three ingredients from Buddy's famous breakfast.
Spaghetti.
Yep.
Maple syrup.
Yep.
Chocolate Pop-Tarts.
Yes, well done. What is the last item on Elf's itinerary in the first day he plans with his dad?
Hold hands?
No. Snuggle. What fee was Will Ferrell offered to make an Elf sequel in 2014? Was it 18 million, 29 million, or 34 million?
29 million.
In his worried phone call to his father, what common household fixture does Buddy claim is evil?
The radiator.
Well done. When Santa shows Michael his nice list, what do all the names on it have in common?
Pass.
They're all names of the crew who worked on the film. What song does Buddy duet with in the bathroom in the apartment store?
Maybe it's cold outside.
Yeah, well done. What kind of throne does Buddy say the fake Santa in the department store sits on?
Of lies.
Well done. Complete this quote. The best way to spread Christmas cheer is?
Singing loud for all to hear.
Well done. For exactly how long does Buddy's infamous burp last? Is it 10 seconds, 11 seconds, or 12 seconds?
12 seconds.
Well done. And finally, true or false, Will Ferrell once worked as a department store Santa before he was famous.
True.
Yeah, I mean, take a punt. Yes, it is true. Well done.
Who brings the jokes? Do you bring the jokes? Does Merlin bring the jokes? Do you have, in the 260 people working on the film?
Well, we worked with Mark Burton, the screenwriter, who's been brilliant on this movie. He's on We're Rabbit and different Chicken Run. And when we make jokes in the room, Mark then makes them funny.
like when you and I work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, obviously, yeah. The reason I ask is that we do one of the most loved features of our podcast... is the laughter lift, where
People, you know, the gags are just fantastic, and I deliver them as a professional comedian would. Much, in fact, a lot of them envy the, you know, the platform that I get. Anyway, so we asked our audience. We haven't, Mark and I haven't seen these jokes, but these are sent.
We're already dreading opening.
Yes. So, but we want you to judge which is the funniest. Okay. So, Mark, yes. Pull this cracker. Okay.
Hang on. For the purposes of the sound recording. Bang.
Okay, this is sent from Connie in Edinburgh, age 12. How do sheep in Mexico say Merry Christmas? Feliz Navidad.
I think that's actually quite good.
I think that is very good.
Actually quite good.
Okay, here's another bang. So Feliz Navidad is... Okay, that didn't...
These bang. Are rubbish.
Bang. We haven't... Could you animate a bang? Could you put that in? Oh, it'll be about
give me a week.
Work. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Mark, do you want to empty the contents of these?
Yeah, of these?
Okay, Susan from Reading. How did Darth Vader know what Luke Skywalker got him for Christmas? There you go. Because he felt his presence.
Ah, yeah.
Mark, do you want to do the next one?
That's a good one.
Nick, you don't need glasses, do you?
I do, actually, yeah. Oh. Got some here in my Wallace and Gromit case.
Available from the gift store.
So there's, Nick's glasses are in a Wallace and Gromit case.
Merlin, okay. You're good. You've got glasses.
Okay. What does a magician call his father?
I don't know. What does a magician call his father?
Dada.
Okay, that's good. Who sent that in? I think there's a name on there.
That's from Rick Walker in Glasgow.
Okay. I quite like that. I like that one. Yeah. Okay,
just
Merlin.
Morph down.
Merlin has been building his morph, which is now looking fantastic. Merlin, go ahead.
How much does Santa have to park his sleigh? Nothing. It's on the house. And that's from Lana. Lana in Sheffield, aged 8.
Okay, thank you, Lana. Nick and Merlin will decide their favourite joke in just a moment. And also, they promised to include it in the next Wallace and Gromit film, which will be with you in 37 years.
Okay, two more. This one from James Cooper. What goes ho, 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 thump? Santa laughing his head off.
And from Sanjita in Essex, why did the Rudolph cross the road? Because he was tied to the chicken. Okay, very good. So thank you very much, Steve, for elevating the laughter lift to heights that it's never been before. Which do you think should... Which is our favourite joke?
I like the Darth Vader one myself.
Okay. Merlin?
Yeah, that's pretty good, but I did like the one I read out. I was quite...
Yeah, and you read it out very well.
Oh, thank you very much.
It was marvellous. Yeah.
But it's not all about you, Merlin.
Oh, is it not?
Oh, no, actually it is, because you're our guest on the show. Absolutely.
Are you from Cornwall originally?
No.
No, just Merlin is an unusual name, but not a Cornish connection.
Are you a wizard?
We're hippies.
Oh, fine.
Yeah. My sister's called Skye.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
So the morph is almost completely finished. How long would you normally take to make a morph?
When I'm at full speed, 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Okay.
I haven't sculpted a mouth and I haven't got any white for the eyes, but he's nearly there.
See, quite a few years ago, Nick came on the Five Live show and he... I gave him some plasticine and he made a Wallace or a Gromit, I forget which.
It's a Gromit, yeah.
Yes, and I said, can we auction it for comic relief or something? And you said yes, and then you had to make a lot of phone calls for copyright. So with that in mind, Merlin, what are you going to do with that morph?
Well, he won't last very long, but I'll leave him here if you want.
What is the future for... I know this is a very greedy question because you've spent ages just making this film. A Wallace and Gromit and Feathers coming back... At some stage, is your head full of Wallace and Gromit ideas?
Well, the door is open, isn't it?
Yes, because we are. Well, I nearly spoilt it then.
Oh, what?
I was going to. Yeah.
Ooh. Anyway.
It was a joke, but that's usually for people who've seen the film.
Hold it.
what was the original question?
The original question, way back when, was: do you intend to keep making Wallace and Gromit movies?
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay, that's good.
Like Jason said, if people still watch them, we'll still make them.
Yeah, yeah. And are you wedded to the longer format? You know, is there something, you know, is a 30-minute story still attractive, or are you quite happy making movies now?
I think, well, the longer form is quite tiring. So.
Yeah. Although this one did start out as a half hour, didn't it?
It did, actually. The gnome idea was a half hour.
It was only when feathers turned up that we realised it needed a bigger canvas. So,
And the voice for, we should just mention that the voice for the terrifying, I've always thought gnomes are terrifying anyway.
Yes, utterly terrifying.
It's also worth saying, it's probably got a U certificate and it's 6:10, but this is a genuinely scary film.
Yes. Yeah.
The gnomes are genuinely terrifying, and Rhys Shearsmith does the voice, and he's a scary guy.
Yeah. And I think we've invented a new subgenre of horror, the gnome noir.
There'll be many films made in this genre. So Rhys is amazing, because he's a great, you know, writer-director in his own right, but he does comedy so well, and he's very, very comfortable just sliding into the darkness when we needed. And so he was just brilliant. And I think we got a PG rating for the.
There's always been that element. Actually, I think some of the early appearances of Feathers McGraw are scary anyway.
Yeah.
Curse of the Were-Rabbit, because it's so beautifully homaging things like Hammer and the kind of, you know, the great chillers. There are things in that are scary as well. You know, the first appearance of the Were-Rabbit is creepy. And then one of the lovely things about Wallace and Gromit is that they do understand that you like to be scared. Even when you're a kid, it's part of the fun of it all.
Yes, that's a lot of the inspiration is, I think, going back to those, you know, like Village of the Damned, you know.
Yeah.
I used to love being frightened of that, you know, like, and Doctor Who, all those things.
You know, Village of the Damned was filmed at my school. Yeah, I wish that we could have recorded the reaction that you literally both did, a comedy animated double take.
Was it like a documentary or something?
Yeah, it was.
Very good.
He does the jokes.
He does.
He does the jokes.
He is in charge.
So as our special guests were Nick Park and Merlin Crossingham, what else could we do for our One Frame Back feature? Obviously, we asked you for your favourite Aardman films.
Of course.
This is all from Blue Sky, where all the cool kids are. Evelyn Koch says, The Wrong Trousers. Watched it for the first time when I was 11 and was completely overwhelmed by the sheer magic of it. Gromit's facial expressions alone convey more emotion than many performances by human actors. It's one of the best films ever.
It is.
James Pooley, the Creature Comfort adverts, everyone remembers them as being for British Gas, but actually they were for Heat Electric. The Mandela Effect strikes again.
Is that right? Wow.
Isn't that interesting? I find the Mandela Effect very interesting, which is, of course, false memory. It came from, I can't remember who it was who said it in the first place, but was convinced that Nelson Mandela had died in prison.
People remember seeing news stories about Nelson Mandela dying in prison,
except that obviously he didn't, because he went on to, so and was president of South Africa, famously released, and so on. So, I know it's not on the same scale, but yes, you're right, James. Everyone assumes it's British Gas, or they remember it's British Gas, but it's Heat Electric. Oh. Benjamin Russell says, Curse of the Were-Rabbit might be the funniest feature film of all time, and yet it still pales in comparison with how efficient and clever and inventive and surprising The Wrong Trousers is. It's simply the best. Lucy Dantes says Chicken Run. And Jeb Putnahad says, I'd love to say The Wrong Trousers just for the Penguin, but I can't go past A Grand Day Out. And then Jeb says, the jokes are great and that train chase is pure magic. But of course, the train chase is in The Wrong Trousers.
Wrong Trousers, yeah.
Not in A Grand Day Out.
So which maybe, is actually laying the track in front of the train.
Yes, which is genuinely breathtaking even now. Okay, so I mean, I think our listeners are right. I mean, it's The Wrong Trousers, isn't it?
Well, I have a particular fondness for The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, because I thought that was one of the most. I mean, is it interesting? When I used to do the Kermode Awards and the Culture Show, I gave that film the Best Cinematography Award. I know that it's an animated stop motion film in which it's a series of still images put together to create the illusion of motion. But the thing about them, and in fact, we were talking about this a little bit with a new film as well, is that they shoot them with still cameras in a way that is incredibly cinematic, and they take their lighting really, really seriously. And I think Curse of the Were-Rabbit is one of the best shot films I have ever seen. I think it looks amazing. So I mean, I love Wrong Trousers, but I am going to go for Curse of the Were-Rabbit because I thought it was such a brilliant feature.
And as everyone will have noticed, what with the posters and everything, even though they are on buses and bus stops, there's a new Lord of the Rings movie. Tell us more.
Well, was there any part of you that thought, you know, this Lord of the Rings thing hasn't been mined fully? I think we need even more of it.
Well, I didn't watch the TV version because I thought Peter Jackson had kind of done it, basically, and there was nothing else to do. But then I'm not a Lord of the Rings completist.
No, me neither, despite the fact that I have watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy many times. Anyway, so this is an anime fantasy from director Kenji Kamiyama, who started out doing background artist work on things like Kiki's Delivery Service and Akira. Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh are executive producers, so it is part of that world. Screenplay by Jeffrey Addis and Will Matthews and Phoebe Gittins and Artie Papagiorgiou, based on details from the appendices of Lord of the Rings. I mean, you know, it's like one of these
already,
things.
Already.
We're going back to the index. So it's narrated by, well, Miranda Otto returns from the live action series. Essentially, just about 200 years before the events of Lord of the Rings, we get essentially the origin story of Helm's Deep. Here's a clip.
All Middle-earth knows the tale of the War of the Ring. But 200 years before that...
Riders of the Mark! Brothers of Rohan!
There was an older tale.
Arise!
We come with an offer to strengthen Rohan.
Hera, daughter of Helm, I, Wolf, seek your hand in marriage.
Our fathers speak as if I were not even in the room.
I do not want to marry you.
You do not seek an alliance. You seek a throne.
So you will have noticed in there the immediately recognizable and very fruity tones of Brian Cox.
Yes.
Giving it some royal welly. So this is the story of Hera, previously unnamed daughter of King Helm Hammerhand, whose position is under threat from the Dunlendings, because she's an independent spirit. She's wild and headstrong. She's got an affinity for birds. Her soul takes flight. She's a warrior spirit. And there is an abortive attempt at the beginning to marry her off to Wolf, which goes badly, leads to a fist fight. Brian Cox's king lamps the other guy, accidentally kills him with a single punch, thereby starting a terrible feud and, you know, much adventuring. Now, the thing is, there have been animated Middle-earth adventures before. We've talked about the Ralph Bakshi animation from the 1970s, which is good and weird and really creepy, although it's very truncated. It only sort of does a bit of the story. And then there were a couple of made-for-TV features by Jules Bass and Arthur Rankin in the 70s and 80s. I honestly went into this thinking, okay, I don't know that I need more backstory. I don't know that I need more filling in. But, you know, let's see where we go. Let's give it the best shot. At the end of 2.25 hours of this, I felt like, well, I really didn't particularly need that. I mean, the animation has got a sort of nice retro feel to it. They've done this weird thing that it's shot doing actors doing motion capture, which is then translated into 3D with a game engine, and then that's translated to 2D, but not through rotoscoping, through being used as a reference point, which all sounds like, okay, that's amazing. That's going to create something that's got that kind of 2D hand-drawn, but it's going to be a mixture. And actually, you watch it, and I mean, I hate to say this, but the way in which the characters move looked like Marine Boy. I mean, it looked like some of it, you know, I know it's been created in a gaming engine, and gaming engines are incredibly brilliant. This looked like they were created in a not very brilliant gaming engine. I mean, there were some good backgrounds and some, like I said, some nicely kind of retro stylings in the faces, but some of it is very sloggy. I read an article about the way they did the animation, and they said, well, the result of this is that it creates more fluid movement. And fluid is absolutely not the word I would have used. I mean, at times you felt like the visuals were struggling to keep up with the voice performances, particularly when you got Brian Cox, because Brian Cox is Brian Cox and, you know, gives it some old school heft. Hera is essentially an old school Ghibli heroine, and that's good. And it's nice that you've got a big romping animation in which there's an independently spirited young woman at the center of it, who, you know, it takes inspiration from things like Nausicaa. The problem is, as soon as you start comparing this to Ghibli, you start thinking, I wish I was watching a Ghibli film, or Ghibli, as we've now discovered, and I'm not. So look,
Lord of the Rings completists might feel that it fills in some backstory that they were really in need of. People who've got a fondness for slightly retro animation, but given a 21st century edge, Mayfair, I thought it was a slog. I thought that it was a, you know, it was a long, well, you know, that thing in, is it in one of the Clerks movies in which he says, you know, the second Lord of the Rings movies, movie basically consists of somebody walking from here to there. Well, there's a lot of shoe leather in this film. And I, at no point did I feel I'm really going with this. Just thought, I wish I was gone with it.
What's it called again?
It's called Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim. See, Rohirrim. Rohirrim.
That's the only time we've done a movie review and you haven't mentioned the title until the very end because we knew that you wouldn't be able to say it right.
Rohirrim. Rohirrim.
Rohirrim.
Rohirrim. Rohirrim.
Okay, that'll do.